Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast for Tuesday, October 4th, 2011. I'm Jason Powell, here with a review of the WWE Raw show that aired on USA Network on October 3rd. The show is live from Lafayette, Louisiana. And before I get going here, just a quick plug this afternoon here. Well, not too long after you guys are hearing this, I will be on the PW Torch live cast with Wade Keller, and the show is available at blogtalkradio.com. 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern for 1 hour. It's a free audio show, and calls are welcome and encouraged. And also emails, you have to send those to Keller, and I don't have his email address handy, but calls are certainly welcome and encouraged. And then the bonus portion of the show, which usually goes anywhere from 20 to 40 minutes, will be available exclusively to both Torch and ProWrestling.net members. If you're interested in .net membership, we have a lot of audio each and every week, hours of audio, new audio each and every week available to our members on the ad-free version of the site. There's also a members forum that you can correspond with me, the other .net writers, and other .net readers. And all of this is available exclusively on the .net member site, and the pricing is just $7.50 per month. If you want to take the annual option, you can save yourself a couple dollars a month, and it goes down to $5.50 per month if you take that annual option. If you're interested in signing up, just head on over to ProWrestling.net. You can't miss the sign-up area. It's right there on the right side of your screen, and you can receive almost instant access to all those features that I just mentioned. My apologies to the members for being so late with this today. I had to postpone last night. I've got a girlfriend who was homesick from work yesterday and wanted to do it this morning, but I had an errand to run, and then she came home again not feeling so hot. So a little bit behind, but so this is the Better Late Than Never edition. I do apologize. I'm usually better about this, but sometimes these things just come up. But as for Raw, as far as, holding my interest, it was a good show. As far as the storyline direction, I'm not so crazy about it, especially that final segment. I thought things got off to a really good start. We had Michael Cole, Jim Ross, and Booker T on commentary. Jerry Lawler was still selling his injuries, which he didn't really sell when he came out later in the show. So that's why Booker T and his aw and whoa were on commentary again. But they got right to it this week. There was no, they didn't play the opening video or anything like that. It just a quick pan of the crowd while the announcers talked. And then they got right into the first match, which was Randy Orton defeating Drew McIntyre in 5:25. The crowd very hot for Randy Orton. And McIntyre, not so much. I mean, they're just not doing anything with Drew McIntyre these days. You'll see him more on Superstars if you can actually see the show outside the United States than you will on WWE Raw. I still think there's something there with McIntyre. As I've said before, I think it really comes down to the way that he needs to improve essentially on the mic. He's very one-dimensional in his promos. It's just very straightforward, and there's really, he doesn't. It's just kind of all angry talk, and that's about it. There's no humor there. There's just no change. I mean, it's just very straightforward. And for some guys, that works. For Drew McIntyre, it just hasn't. But, he's young, and I think he's still 27, roughly, I want to say. So I think the guy still has a bright future, but he just needs to improve on the mic, and then obviously WWE Creative needs to get behind the character again. In this match, McIntyre got one near fall. It wasn't a squash, which is what I assumed it was going to be coming out of Hell in a Cell with Orton losing to Mark Henry. I thought, oh, here we go. They're going to give Orton a quick victory to show that he's still dominant, but it was a little more back and forth than I expected it to be, which is fine. No one really bought in when McIntyre went for a pinfall attempt. It was a near fall, and wasn't like the crowd was on the edge of their seat thinking that they were going to see an upset, but they were definitely behind Orton. They chanted Randy during the match, and Orton ended up getting the win with the RKO. He was standing on the ropes, and he just looked back at McIntyre and decided to drop him with another RKO after the match. And as he was celebrating and playing to the live crowd, Mark Henry's music played. He came out and held the World Heavyweight Championship title above his head at ringside Orton responded to the gloating by running out to ringside and attacking Henry, and then John Laurinaitis led a group of security to the ring in hopes of keeping them apart, and Orton pulled away a couple of times and got some shots in, so good pull-apart brawl, and I thought, all in all, you know, the opening 15 minutes of the show, better than usual. Now, there's some really good talking segments at Open Raw, but it's just become so formula. It's nice to see them stray from that once in a while and shake things up and not go with that long talking segment. I mean, if you've got something to say, great. You know, if there's really a good angle there, but it just almost feels, you know, like WWE feels like it's an obligatory segment that they have to go there some weeks, even when there's really not that much to get over in that opening segment. So, but not this time around. So nice change. After the break, Henry was still in the ring, and they showed another video package to put him over as the monster that he's become. And then the announcers hyped that Big Show would be making his return on Friday's SmackDown television show. And talking about how he's, you know, reminding everybody that Henry's the person who took him out and implying that he's coming back for revenge. Very nice touch. I mean, it should just be a weekly thing, and we shouldn't even have to praise them for this. But WWE, one of my main criticisms is that they don't do enough to create synergy between the two brands. Now, Raw's a super show. You get SmackDown wrestlers on there. But I my fear is that some people are going to see the top stars of SmackDown on Raw, get their fix of them, and not watch SmackDown. The last 2 weeks of ratings have been good, but you know, so hopefully it's trending the right way for WWE. But you know, when you're not really promoting anything specifically for SmackDown other than the random videos that they like to play, the commercial teasers that really don't tease anything, it you know, you're not really using Raw to promote SmackDown as well as you could. And in this case, they actually did that by hyping Big Show's return. I like that they saved it for SmackDown. It makes that show feel a little more relevant. And, you know, I mean, I just don't, you know, you don't always have to have every big return happen on Raw or anything like that. So just a nice tease. I hope we see more of that from WWE going forward, because I think it can only help the Friday night ratings. Second match was Mark Henry beating John Morrison in a non-title match in 2 minutes. Morrison, he went on the offensive early and was roughing up Henry pretty good. Even he hit Starship Pain, in fact, his finisher, but Henry kicked out of that and then came back and got the World's Strongest Slam for the pin. The crowd was into this. They, you know, they've done a good job of establishing Henry as this monster. And so when a guy like Morrison comes in and just, you know, just starts roughing him up right off the bat and shows good fire, the crowd gets into it like, wow, this could be an upset. It's amazing to think that, you know, look back even 6 months and think about, you know, would it be considered a big upset if John Morrison pinned Mark Henry? No. And now, I mean, here we are, and Henry's like the most dominant heel in WWE, arguably. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else that really fits that description. I don't think so, and not off the top of my head. So they've done a great job with him. I mean, I want to see Morrison. I want to see them do more with Morrison at some point. I'm not sure what's going on there, why he, and this was fine. I didn't have any, there's no shame right now in being pinned clean by Mark Henry. I mean, Randy Orton's done it. And so for John Morrison to get that much offense, if it wasn't for all of his recent losses, then, you know, I wouldn't even be mentioning it, but more, they've got to do something to get him back on track. Because he just means nothing right now. You know, in this match he did when he showed the good fire, but I don't think people are lining up to see John Morrison, and they should be. I mean, he's a talented guy, still hasn't found that connection with the crowd. He's another guy who needs to improve on the mic and, you know, quit being so quirky and just, you know, find something that the fans can connect with, and then I think the sky's the limit for the guy. We went to Jim Ross, from there we went to Mark Henry taking the mic and telling Morrison that he knows what it's like to be in the ring with a beast now, and he said he defended his title, and now he's done with Randy Orton. I hope he's right for a while. I'm ready for something different. It's a good program, but I'd like to see them stretch this out. I mean, at some point, someone other than Randy Orton and Christian have to challenge for the championship on pay-per-view, right? It's just, you know, it's nonstop Orton primarily, and, you know, I think it would be good for Henry to start facing some other people. Maybe it will be Big Show coming up. But Henry was talking about Big Show, saying he knows he's looking for him. He said he's not hard to find because he'll be the guy holding the title belt. And Henry said Big Show will have the shortest return in WWE history because he's entering the Hall of Pain again. And good, effective, brief promo that reminded people of Big Show again and, you know, got them fired up about that. And we'll see where they go as far as, you know, will he put the title on the line against Orton? I think sometimes it's best to, you know, there's a lot of Orton fans out there. You know, make them hungry for it. It's so routine for them to see Orton either with the title or challenging for the title. I think at some point, and I wish they'd take this approach with John Cena too, slow down. It doesn't always have to be them. And I think, yeah, you might lose something in pay-per-view buy rates if you don't have a suitable challenger to step in and go for the title. But it might mean you might make it up long-term if you get those fans hungry enough to see their guy go for the title. Of course, I mean, it's WWE, and it seems like Cena's always around that title picture, and so is Orton, so I don't know how much it's going to change long term, but I think we might get a break from Orton versus Henry, and even if it's until Survivor Series or the December pay-per-view, I think, you know, you can, if they play it up that Orton really wants that shot and Henry seems to be ducking him, it might create some interest there. They were doing good, effective hype, by the way, consistently for the 12-man tag main event. I went into it not expecting a hole. I'm just like, it's another random 12-man tag with, you know, nothing really at stake here. And we'll get to it later, but it turned out to be a hell of a match. And they did a really good job of making it seem special in the build-up just by promoting it as frequently as they did. We had John Laurinaitis telling the heels in the main event, the main event heels for the 12-man tag, and Vicky Guerrero, that Triple H sent him to find out whether David Otunga had anything to do with the lawsuit that The Miz and R-Truth filed. And he said, and Otunga basically said, so what if I did? And Vicky said that they were going to air their grievances in the ring, and Laurinaitis started texting as soon as they left the room and they went to a commercial break. They didn't really do a great job of explaining the lawsuit or the ramifications of it, and it's kind of an awkward storyline. Christian's music played. It was he and Alberto Del Rio. Let's see. Well, a group of heels were already in the ring, and then Alberto Del Rio was introduced as the WWE champion, and he made his stage entrance, not with the sports car. And Ross said Alberto didn't look celebratory despite the fact that he regained the WWE championship, and Booker congratulated Del Rio for doing a hell of a job, and Cole agreed with that. Del Rio boasted that he regained the title by beating Cena and Punk, but he said he couldn't celebrate because he was jumped and attacked by two men, referring to The Miz and R-Truth. And Del Rio said it happened because Triple H doesn't know how to run the company. He complained about the Hell in a Cell structure being raised and lowered to aid the attackers, and then alleged that Hunter was the only person in the company with the power to make that happen. Christian took his turn on the mic and complained that Raw has become an unsafe work environment, and then they just took turns, one after another, with all the talent, all the heels, you know, having a line or two talking about how ineffective Triple H was, or is, I guess. I think he's still in power for now, at least. And then eventually Triple H's music played, and he walked onto the stage and asked what happened to the WWE. He said, there was a time when men stood in the ring and fought no matter what happened. He said they didn't stand there, whine, and cry like kids. He said they didn't threaten lawsuits. They just fought like men. I didn't like this because, we've heard CM Punk talk about how, you know, WWE, he wants it to be cool again as if it's not cool now. And now we all have our opinions about whether it is or not. And I lean toward it's not all that cool these days when you compare it to some of the great stuff we've seen in the past. But there's a lot of people out there, especially when you're catering to John Cena's fans, the kids. They don't remember. They weren't around for the Attitude Era. They don't know that it's not as cool as it used to be. So why point that out to them? And, you know, in this case, why make all of especially the heels just look like whiners, and worse yet, when we get to the final segment, everyone in the company looked like a bunch of pansies, essentially. Triple H brought up the 12-man tag main event and ran through all the names of the baby faces the heels would be facing, but he forgot Mason Ryan. And he said he doesn't want the heels to whine and complain. He wants them to do what people paid to see them do, shut up and fight. And then he headed backstage, and Cole was complaining that nothing was settled because Triple H didn't address the concerns of the talent. And then we get the announcers narrating brief footage of R-Truth and the Miz's attack at Hell in a Cell. And they were they also explained that their actions via Twitter. They explained their actions via Twitter and promised more for later in the show. We got clips of Beth Phoenix winning the Divas Championship. And then I cringed. I'm like, really? We're following up with another tag team match with Beth Phoenix and Natalya against Kelly Kelly and Eve. I'm like, oh my God. I was bored with the Bellas facing Eve and Kelly. And now it's just, feels like every week we're getting some combination here. Usually in tag team form on Raw. But it was quick. It was a no contest, apparently. And not, they didn't really give us a finish. Beth and Natalya fighting Kelly and Eve to an apparent no contest. Maybe the heels won by DQ, I don't know. But what happened was that they ended up at ringside, and then Kelly ran Beth into the announcer's table, and then just started screaming at the top of her lungs as she was beating up Beth on the floor. And she was clearly the loudest person in the building, because I don't think that many people were into this. And Ross was talking about how that we were seeing a side of Kelly that he didn't know existed. And, I mean, what the story was, I don't think it was all that effective. It's, Beth Phoenix and Natalya have just become random divas. For me, especially with Beth, the appeal was that she was dominant, and they're not making her that way anymore. She's just another, she's basically a typical WWE heel, and I'd like to see her be more like Mark Henry in the Divas division than what she's doing now. And Kelly, the screen, it's just, I have a hard time buying her in this role that, I get they're trying to show that she's angry and now she's really after these two, but I don't know. I think they've gone about this poorly with, I think they took too long to get the title on Beth, and it would have been fine if Beth had been dominating. Like I said, I've been saying I was fine with what happened at SummerSlam with Beth kind of controlling the match and Kelly eking out a victory out of nowhere. I didn't like that they did it in Buffalo after having an even match that Kelly essentially just beat her clean. And, I think if you would have had Beth, even if she lost at SummerSlam, dominate and win at Night of Champions, continue to dominate other divas on Raw, and then Kelly comes back and she flips out like this, then it's like, okay, now she's mad, now she's, got more of a purpose, and this is a different side of Kelly. It didn't come across well to me. We went backstage with John Laurinaitis apologizing to Triple H for his actions at the pay-per-view, and he said he wouldn't mind an apology in return from Hunter, since he was knocked down during the post-main event angle. Laurinaitis said Triple H should look every talent in the eye and seek a vote of confidence. Hunter grabbed Laurinaitis by the tie and said that he's afraid that the guy who's working closest with him is the guy who's undermining everything he does. It took you this long, Hunter? And he said that if Laurinaitis wants a vote of confidence, he should get everyone in the ring, and he told Laurinaitis to make sure that he's there too. And then we went to, remember when The Rock said he wasn't back just to promote a movie? I mean, granted, he's not. He's around for more than that. But we got a pretty lengthy preview of the Fast Five DVD, promoting the DVD release. And then Jinder Mahal cut a promo in his native tongue before he was interrupted by Santino Marella, who came out with that awkward cobra sleeve thing that he has. No unibrow. Credit to Sean Waltman. I had my Twitter page open last night because one of the rare Mondays I had it open because I just didn't care if anyone spoiled the result of the Monday Night Football game for me. Just one of those weeks where it's like, really, the Colts? God, it's so frustrating because the one Sunday I've had completely off so far during NFL season, it looked like a dream game on paper with Steelers and Colts, but not so much this year without Peyton Manning and really the Steelers just not being the Steelers. But all right, no more football talk, at least for now. No unibrow for Santino, and which I'm fine with it. I don't know how much of the appeal of his character was that he had a unibrow, but he mocked Jinder by speaking in gibberish, and they kind of went back and forth with Jinder Mahal speaking in his native tongue and Santino speaking in gibberish, and this led to a match that Santino won in 35 seconds with the Cobra. Things are not going well for Mr. Mahal these days. It looked like they were going to do something with him, and now he's just losing quickly and decisively. And maybe he'll just be a star of WWE superstars, or Maybe we're going to see his name pop up in, on the future endeavored list one of these days from WWE. I'm just kind of wondering. We went to the announcers hyping Triple H's vote of confidence and at that segment and the 12-man tag. So, again, effective hype through consistently throughout the show. One of those things that I think TNA's improved in, an area they've improved in as well, for because for quite a while there, it was like they would announce the match and then just kind of forget whatever the main event of their show was. And they've been better about that. And WWE, I mean, they've always been pretty consistent in doing that, but I thought last night especially they did a good job, and I think it has to do with the quarter hours that they've been getting lately, where in some cases the show has been losing viewers in the second hour, which is also a problem that TNA had for quite a while, where it's, this, you know, it just shouldn't be that way. The first hour of a wrestling show, or any show for that matter, if you're doing things right, but wrestling-wise, it should be, you know, you do whatever you do in the first hour, and then that second hour is, you know, people are into it, it's getting, you're building up toward the main event, and naturally the rating goes up, but it just, it has been, always been that way, and so I wonder if this is WWE trying to counter that. We got a video package that hyped Brodus Clay, looking, I mean, he's been on Superstars lately, he was, worked a dark match last night at the Raw show. You know, he's been winning just squash match after squash match. I'm looking forward to his return. I never understood why they just, you know, put him with Alberto Del Rio just to make him the fall guy. I think, Brodus Clay has a lot of talent, and I was disappointed with the way they, you know, treated him there. But he's been away for a while, and now they can kind of, I think they can basically start over. Sure, some fans are going to remember that, he wasn't off to that red hot start or anything, you know, but, you know, Mark Henry has proven that you can, because somebody asked me recently, I think it was in .NET members Q&A, you know, is it going to be too late for someone? And it's like, it's never too late. Look at Mark Henry, but, and it's certainly not too late for Brodus Clay. So, you know, I'm just curious to see, are there going to be some similarities between Brodus and Mark Henry? Because I think what we're seeing from Henry, that's a way that I can envision Brodus Clay being pushed too. So we'll see if there's some differences or if they you know, don't have an issue with keep making them similar. The announcers then talked about Miz and Truth at ringside and set up footage of the attack from Hell in a Cell. Raw said viewers would see footage. They will have a hard time believing actually happened. I'm sorry. I mean, in Ross's defense, I mean, he's just that this is how you have to sell it, but it doesn't, I mean, it was a cool scene. I know, you know, Will Pruitt, for instance, he really liked the end of the pay-per-view. When you see the footage, it looks chaotic and whatnot, but I'm not really not getting into this just yet. Part of my concern continues to be that I don't, you know, when I see the Miz and R-Truth beating people up with pipes and whatnot, I can buy it with R-Truth if I can kind of forget about all the comedy stuff that he's done. I think he can play that edgy character. Miz has just been a chicken shit heel. And, you know, he talks a big game, but when push comes to shove, he's got to cheat to win. And, you know, when he's in there with the big boys like Cena. And so I'm just having a hard time seeing them in this role and really seeing them as a major threat because they're not established, you know, major main eventers. Sure, they work some main event matches, Miz more than Truth, but again, it's the style of heel that they are where I just don't see them, especially Miz, as threats yet. But, and you know, the footage was kind of cool, but it wasn't as shocking as WWE tried to make it out to be. And then we got the footage of the attack with Hunter, roughing them up afterward, too. And then Cole set up footage of The Miz and R-Truth speaking on YouTube about what happened at the pay-per-view. They were once again apologetic and said they want their jobs back, and they blamed Triple H for what happened and said he would have done the same thing if he were in their position. So the guys that are beating the holy hell out of people and getting arrested, now they're just really apologetic. Not a big fan. After the video, Cole was about to go off on a tirade, but he was interrupted by CM Punk's music, and John Cena made his entrance after Punk, and then Cole snuck in another plug for Fast Five's DVD, and then Cena played to the crowd. They went to commercial. After the break, we got footage of Mason Ryan turning on Jack Swagger and Dolph Ziggler from the week before to remind people why he's suddenly a babyface. Nice little touch that I think a lot of us forget about unless it doesn't happen. that you need to, you know, follow up with that. You can't just assume everyone saw your show the week before. That's an area where TNA is still, you know, still a work in progress that WWE does a very good job with. Yeah, I mean, for those of us who do watch the show weekly, it can be a little bit repetitive, but when they keep doing it week after week, but it's very necessary, so and good work there. Fifth match was John Cena, CM Punk, Sheamus, Kofi Kingston, Evan Bourne, and Mason Red Flag Ryan beating the team of Alberto Del Rio, Christian, Cody Rhodes, Dolph Ziggler, Jack Swagger, and David Otunga, and Vicky Guerrero was with the heels, and it was a 12-man tag match that lasted approximately 26 minutes and 35 seconds. I love it. I mean, again, I'm not someone, when WWE advertises these huge multi-man tag match, you know, the 10 and 12-man tags, because they're generally not anything at stake. It's just kind of like, it's filler. But they usually do a really good job of there's always that one segment or that one portion of the match late where everyone, it's a bit repetitive. If you're aware of the formula, you'll see it coming. And I certainly did last night. But it's usually done so well that it doesn't bother me. And I'm referring to that spot where they start taking turns hitting finishers on one another. And, one guy will hit a finisher. And then, let's say Mason Ryan hits his finisher on someone. Then one of the heels will hit their finisher on Ryan. And then the heel will be taken out. And it just goes and goes and goes. And in this case, they did that. And the legal man, Sheamus, was sitting in the corner the whole time selling something as all this was going on. And he recovered and hit the brogue kick on Ziggler and pinned him after all those finishers. And the crowd eats it up every time. If they did this, every week, then I think people would really spot the formula. The average viewer would. But because they don't do these big, 12 and 10-man tag matches all that often, and I think some probably have kind of figured out the formula, but it's not just so transparent yet, I think, that it's an issue. And it just was a very good match. I mean, to me, going 26 minutes with a match like this is a major positive for future matches like this, because it was just treated as a really good competitive match. Granted, there was nothing at stake, but I think now, the next time we see one, if they can remind people of how good this one was, I think people will look at it in a different way. And I think it's important to do this because there's only so many big main events you can give away on TV. This doesn't hurt anything. I don't even know if people are going to remember next week that Ziggler lost the match unless WWE wants them to remember. And so, are they going to remember that Sheamus won if WWE doesn't remind them? Probably not. They're just going to remember there was this kick-ass match between the heels and the baby faces and a lot of star power in the match and everything else. And, we need to see more of this on Raw where they're not giving away potential pay-per-view main events in the main event segment. They're giving away matches like this that don't give away too much, but also, deliver in a way that the fans are going to be into. The live crowd that paid for the tickets aren't going to feel cheated. And if the match is good enough, the fans at home are going to be entertained enough that they're not going to be flipping channels, even though there's not a title on the line or a big showdown match. We got an ad for SmackDown that hyped Big Show's return. This was a hell of a lot better than the ad they aired earlier in the show when they teased, questioned whether Mark Henry or Randy Orton would ever be the same again following their Hell in a Cell match, even though we'd already seen Mark Henry and Randy Orton wrestle. And I know technically you can say, maybe they wrestled and they won, but it doesn't mean they're not having lingering effect. I mean, I just think they need to do a better job of selling the Hell in a Cell structure. They need to do a better job with the Hell in a Cell period. But, I think, was it Punk? Somebody came out kind of limping a little bit, but then it all just kind of goes away once the match starts. Hell in a Cell just doesn't mean what it used to, and I'm not saying I want to see, people flying off the top of the structure or anything like that, but it's just, they do a good job of building up via videos leading into it, and if you haven't seen a recent Hell in a Cell, it might entice you to buy the show, but for anyone who has seen the recent Hell in a Cells, in some cases, I felt both matches, especially the World Heavyweight Championship match, it didn't need to be in a Hell in a Cell. They're just, they used it, they'd run each other into it once in a while. But that was about it. I mean, it's just, it really isn't as big and important as it used to be. And I think that's a shame. because it's going the way of the cage match. It means more right now, but there was a time when the cage match was the ultimate blow-off, and it's not anymore. I don't even think it pops a rating if they have one on Raw necessarily. And Hell in a Cell, it's still, to some people, it's a big deal. But it just isn't what it could be. It should be, even if they can't do blood, even if they're not going to do the mega bumps, which again, I'm fine if they don't. You have to find a way to make this feel like the feud blow-off match, the definitive match. This is it. Whoever leaves this match wins the feud, essentially. And, we just got, Henry and Orton had their Hell in a Cell match on Sunday, and the feud just lives on right away, first thing on the show on Monday. So how can you take that seriously, even whether you ordered the show or not, if you're, they position it as this, no one will ever be the same once they go into Hell in a Cell structure and all that. But then you see first thing Monday that, Orton and Henry are just fine. Then we got that was ring in or after the ad, then the various factions of wrestlers started coming to the ring. They broke them into groups with like brand heels and brand faces, and then the divas and even the referees. And then Jerry Lawler's music played, and he walked out carrying his crown. And Jim Ross quickly said, "I didn't know that Jerry was going to be here." And they went to a commercial break. And then after the break, the almighty Triple H makes his entrance, and he gets to stand in the ring while the peasants stood at the ringside on the floor. And I'm not the big Triple H conspiracy theory guy that some have been over the years. A lot of online fans, I think, especially back when, there was a time when it was like, God, get this title off him. I'm tired of it. I felt the same way. But there were some pretty big leaps from fans as far as. Their questioning of some of the things that Triple H has supposedly done over the years to trying to hold others down and keep his power and all that stuff. But this whole segment to me was way too much about Triple H and made everybody else look bad. But we'll get into it here in a minute. So Hunter said before they go to the vote of confidence, he had to say that the job is harder than he thought it would be. And he said he didn't ask for the job. It was given to him. He said he's old school and he likes to see guys get beat up, but he said he doesn't work for the wrestlers, he works for the fans. And Triple H asked the talent what they thought. Wade Barrett spoke on behalf of a group of heel SmackDown wrestlers, I believe it was, and he said it was an unsafe work environment, and Hunter reminded everyone that Barrett led a faction of Nexus wrestlers and said the only reason he's upset with the chaos is because he's not the one causing it. Very true. So true that I don't know if I would have brought it up because things were a lot more chaotic when Nexus was, at their early peak, beating people up left and right and tearing down the set than it is now. And I don't remember anyone calling for, whoever was running the show's head then. Referee Mike Chioda is back from his suspension. He said that he can't recall the referees taking so much abuse during his time with the company. And Hunter said he fired the two guys that roughed them up. And Chioda pointed out that Miz and R-Truth still got into the building. It's like, really? Damn, shut up, dude. This guy, was going to fine them $250,000 for you, but, each. And, it was laying down the law. If that's not trying to help out the referees, I don't know what it is. So I had a hard time with this one. It was like, they got into the building. What's Triple H supposed to do? He can't be everywhere. Calm down. I didn't care for that aspect of it. I thought it was unnecessary. Then Beth Phoenix said the Divas are worried that one of them could be hurt with all the bedlam that's been going on lately. Hunter asked for an example, and Beth said, "I'm just saying it could happen." Like, really? What? All the bedlam? This has not been that chaotic. I'm sorry. That's the major issue I have with this. But we'll stick with this, and I'll go into a tirade, I'm sure. Jerry Lawler entered the ring and said that he doesn't agree with everything that had been said, but he does agree that the show is spiraling out of control. How? He said the part that he disagrees with is he doesn't believe it's Triple H's fault. But he said he thinks someone is behind the scenes pulling the strings and trying to sabotage Triple H. And I'm like, okay, someone's going to, finally someone is like, they've alluded to the string pulling. At some point, doesn't Triple H, the cerebral assassin, this supposedly mastermind guy in WWE storyline wise, doesn't he go, shouldn't he have figured out a long time ago that Laurinaitis is working against him? And shouldn't he have figured out that, yeah, there probably is someone pulling the strings, and it's probably, oh, I don't know, that guy that I took the company from, even though, you know, he didn't take it, according to the storyline, it was, he was, you know, as he even said, he didn't ask for the job, it was given to him, but Vince McMahon, hello, the McMahon family, someone, I assume it's Vince, given the hissy fit that he threw backstage about Alberto Del Rio mentioning his name on Raw a couple weeks ago, but regardless of who it is, I mean, you'd think that Triple H's character would start asking these questions, and he hasn't, and I think it's made him look really bad. Christian spoke up and said it was, Lawler was, so he was saying that Hunter has to know that someone doesn't want him running the company, and he's afraid that things are only going to get worse as long as Triple H is in charge. And I'm like, okay, well, at least he's kind of sticking up for him, and someone should. I thought Lawler was going to be the voice of reason, but he wasn't. So Christian speaks up and said it was time for a vote. He said he and his colleagues voted no confidence. Mike Chioda represented the referees and also delivered the no confidence line. Lawler stood in the ring, and I'm like, here's where Jerry Lawler's going to defend him. And instead he says, no confidence on behalf of him. I don't know why Jerry Lawler got to vote only, you know, just for Jerry Lawler. I don't know. But he said he was, and then he said he was reluctantly walking out. I'm like, wait, so everyone else is like voting no confidence in Jerry Lawler, like the ultimate nice guy babyface in WWE announced. Well, I guess Ross is here with him, but they portray Jerry Lawler in such a positive light. He's basically leading the walkout. What? And way to sell the Mark Henry beating. I mean, he just looked like he was just fine. There was nothing wrong with him. Henry was even out there. Speaking of who was out there and who wasn't, both of the heel world champions were out there, I believe. I think Del Rio was. I know Henry was. But there was no sign of CM Punk and John Cena. They're above this. I guess that's a good sign for CM Punk. But you would think that Mr. Rah-Rah WWE John Cena would want to be there for this. But I guess they're saving him. And I'm guessing he'll be the voice of reason that, you know, rah-rah, Triple H, and it's not his fault, and blah, 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 I'm guessing. So I really wanted Lawler to at least walk over and take Booker with him. Booker did eventually leave, thank God. The various factions of wrestlers and referees then followed Lawler in a walkout, and a brief Triple H chant started, and Dark Sin Cara was revealed as a heel. I assumed he was, but they haven't done a good job of getting that across. The only reason I know this is because he was standing next to Wade Barrett and the other SmackDown heels. And then the seven-man group of babyfaces even walked up the ramp, and Michael Cole followed, and then Booker T left, and then even the freaking ring announcer and production members, including cameramen, started to leave. And the guy who stands at ringside put the camera down. I'm like, are they just going to, is that how the show's going to end? Like the sideways shot with the camera down in the ring? No, because one camera guy left, but the guy who worked the hard camera and one on the Titantron area, they stuck around. Jim Ross was the only person left, though, at ringside. He's like, all right, Jim Ross is going to be the voice of reason. Oh, no, he slowly removes his headset and walks off as the crowd boos him. Why are they making all, I mean, it's one thing for the heels to conspire against Triple H, but okay, I'll get through this. And Triple H was the last remaining man, and the fans were cheering him. And then John Laurinaitis walked onto the stage and kind of shook his head in disgust. And the fans chanted, you suck, and they are right. And Laurinaitis walked to the back. Hunter looked to the fans, held out his arms, was saying something, not over a mic, just kind of saying something to the fans. And that's how the show went off the air. So finally, Triple H, well, according to the conspiracy theorist, finally gets his way. He is now the only man left on Raw, apparently. I don't know if he's going to start beating up fans. My guess, if for those of you who follow Twitter, you already know this, is that WWE is finally setting up their ultimate match, Triple H, against like 200 men, women, referees, and children. And he is going to pedigree all of them. And that'll be it. WWE can end with, they'll just call it a, you know, there's no network, no more WrestleMania, no Rock Cena. It's just Triple H stands tall, and that's the final chapter of WWE. Okay, not really. But I didn't like this because I thought it made, you know, Hunter talking about basically implying that today's wrestlers are pansies. They totally looked like they were. It's one thing for the heels to piss and moan about Triple H. Where was the babyface voice of reason? Why weren't, you know, somebody standing up for him? Jerry Lawler wasn't it. John Morrison, Evan Bourne, I think Kofi Kingston were among that seven-man group of Raw babyfaces that split. None of them did. Jim Ross didn't even, and got booed for it. Here's where it was effective. Because WWE has failed to make me care about whether Triple H keeps his job or not. This one, I mean, I still don't personally, but I think a lot of fans were like me, where it just wasn't that important to them. Now, at least they've put it in a position where Hunter, you're supposed to care. You were given a reason to go, man, this guy's being wronged. I hope he keeps his job. But it wasn't worth sacrificing all the other people in this. Again, it's fine if the heels piss and moan, but the baby faces just walk out. No one stands up and says, this is wrong. It's just, they all leave. They do look like pansies. They look like a bunch of whiners. The divas are upset because what if something does happen? The referees are upset with the guy who, fine, the only two guys that I recall for upping them up lately in a meaningful way that was put over as, you know, part of this storyline was Miz and Truth. He fined them both $250,000. He didn't collect, but he fired them. What more did they want? I just thought it succeeded in terms of making the viewers care about whether Triple H keeps the job or not. Not everybody, of course. There can be some like me who are just like, it doesn't matter that much. But the average fan, they gave them some incentive to care. But it wasn't worth what they did to everybody else. I they all look beneath him standing at ringside. I can get over that. That might be my perception more than the average person out there. But, to all just walk out, cameramen included. I'm like, here's one huge issue. It hasn't been that chaotic. I'm sorry. We've seen WWE be much more chaotic than this. It doesn't make sense to me. You know, it was far more chaotic when Nexus was around last year. When they first got rolling. I mean, there have been so many periods of time where it's been so much more chaotic than this that it didn't feel like they built up to this where it's like, man, they really do need to, this has to be addressed. It just, okay, Miz and R-Truth got in Hell in a Cell and beat up three guys with a pipe. That's out of control chaos. Miz and R-Truth beat up, put their hands on a referee. That's bedlam. No, it's not. And so this just seemed really it was a big reach for WWE to go this far with it. And, to not have any baby faces defend it. I know we're going to have a lot more to say about this in the live cast later this afternoon. Again, 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern, live every Tuesday on blogtalkradio.com. Wade Keller and myself, your call's welcome, so we will be certainly addressing this in more detail. Look at it also as just from the show itself standpoint, not long-term booking. The show itself, you had a good 26-minute, 12-man tag. I like the opening stuff a lot with Mark Henry and Randy Orton plowing through, in reasonable time. I mean, Henry, Morrison got that offense in, McIntyre got some that people really didn't buy into, but they both win their matches. They have their segment together and all that. That was really well done. And even the final segment, I think, can be a ratings generator. Even as bad as it was, I can see where people would. It's one of those things you don't turn the channel during. You want to see how it plays out, even if it's not a very well planned storyline. So it might do well from that regard. And I think it was a good cliffhanger. Where do they go next week? I mean, hell, where do they go with SmackDown? Does everyone just not show up at SmackDown unless Triple H quits? My guess is that the announcement for SmackDown is going to be that Triple H has turned over power of the show temporarily to Teddy Long until this gets sorted out on Raw, something along those lines. So, a good cliffhanger and whatnot. I just don't like how everyone on the show was portrayed with the exception of Triple H. They made Jim Ross look like an ass. They made Jerry Lawler look like an ass. Any babyface that wasn't asking obvious questions and even defending Triple H, I think, looks like just a complete pansy. Everything Hunter is saying about today's wrestlers compared to the old school wrestlers comes across true now. They look like a bunch of whiners. and that's not what people pay to see. So I didn't care for the angle. I know some people liked it. I've heard from some of them. Great. Just wasn't for me. But again, I'll talk more about it this afternoon with Wade Keller in the PW Torch livecast at 4:30 Central, 5:30 Eastern at blogtalkradio.com. So until then, thank you very much for listening. .NET members, you will get the .NET Countdown Show with Will Pruitt and Jake Barnett running through the top five best and worst moments since their show last week. And that's coming up on Wednesday. Brian Fritz of BetweenTheRopes.com is going to be joining me, filling in for the vacation in Chris Shore, and he will be co-hosting the .NET Weekly Audio Show on Thursday afternoon. Both of those shows available exclusively to ProWrestling.net members. The .NET Weekly Show oftentimes has the first-run news. We analyze all the news of the week, and it usually runs. This week may be an exception. I don't know how much time Fritz has, but when it's Shore night, it usually goes at least 90 minutes and sometimes even over 2 hours in length, and it's definitely the flagship show of .NET Audio. So there's hopefully some incentive for you guys to consider the membership side of things. And again, if you're interested, head on over to ProWrestling.net, and you can't miss the sign-up area right there. Membership option. The lowest rate you can get is at annual at $5.50 a month. If you just want to try it for a month, the ad-free version of the site, $7.50. It's a hell of a deal. Hope you guys will take advantage of it. So until next time, thank you very much for listening. Whether you're a member or you check out the ad-based version of the site or the free apps that we have, thank you for your support. It's greatly appreciated, and I will talk to you soon. Take care.